Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
It is not Gwen and Chris today. Well, it will be Gwen at some point, but to start the show, it is Sammy and Scraby. Sam Levitt joining me from Peoria, Arizona. Really appreciate him hanging out with us for the next 3 days until Tony gets here. Sam, what's up, man? I haven't seen your face in a while. It's good to see you.
Hi, Scraby. Nice to hear your voice. You know, I thought, you know, with me leaving for spring training, heading to Peoria, Arizona, I think you and I have developed a very nice friendship over the years at 97.3 The Fan. I figured you would reach out to me at some point. You'd check in on me, maybe a call, maybe a text, maybe an Instagram DM, maybe an email. But you've been MIA. You left me on my own here in Peoria. And I hope you're doing well. Nice to talk to you.
You
look good. Hair looks good. Beard looks good.
Thank you.
I got to say, here in the Airbnb, being Glendale, I look great. I actually switched my camera angle to the other side of the Airbnb. So things are going well here. Happy to be here.
I love it.
Keeping the Padres game right now, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to the Padres in a second, but what someone asked me this earlier today, and I wanted to start off with something light and fun, but what does Sam Levitt do in Peoria, Arizona when he's not doing baseball stuff? I know that you had tried to go to a spa before and it got rained out. I know that you actually do things, so what does a Sam Levitt do outside of baseball?
Well, there's not a ton of time. I mean, the evenings are generally free. So tonight, what am I going to do? Tonight, I think I'm going to try to play pickleball tonight, which I've done a couple of times. I found a couple of places in Peoria. I'm about 15 minutes south by the football stadium here in Glendale. So I think I'll try to play pickleball. But other than that, in the evening, it's really get something to eat. Not a whole lot. You don't have a ton of time. We had one off day. I went on a hike, went to Scottsdale on one off day. We'll see. We have an off day coming up next Monday, so we'll see what I do next Monday. But nothing too
crazy. It's
go
too
out
bad.
To eat
it's too bad that you can't you don't golf, because then you could go out golfing with like Manny Machado and all those guys.
Yeah, we do some socializing. I've had dinner with some friends, live here in Phoenix. Some other people, around the Padres, spring training complex. So yeah, basic stuff.
Dinner. Basic stuff. Okay.
Yeah, basic stuff. Nothing too crazy. You got to be up very early. You know, clubhouse opens
That's 8 a.m.,
8:30, sometimes earlier. So, and to be honest with you, a lot of the people around here got to be up really, really early. Like staff, major league level, minor league level, there are a lot of people that are getting there 5:30, 6 a.m. every morning. So it is spring training, but it's a grind, no doubt about it, for a lot of people here.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's so weird to me that a game that occurs mostly at night is done for the first month and a half during the day when everybody has to wake up early. So I just think it's funny. But yeah, you're right. There are a lot of people that are involved in all of this. It's not just the players and coaches and you and broadcasters. It's a lot of people. And you get to meet all those
people. Yeah, well, think about it this way, right? If the players, now the players, by the time I walk in the clubhouse, there are a lot of players already there that look pretty settled in. So let's say clubhouse opens at 8, which is pretty common. If the players are there before 8, if you're a coach, a staff member, you want to be there before the players. You want things set up. If you're any kind of support staff, you need to be ready to go the moment the players walk in. This is not a scenario where players walk in and people are still arriving and setting up. You want things ready to go. So if they're getting there at, say, the 7 a.m. hour, then think about when staff and coaches and everybody that runs operations throughout the organization, throughout the complex, what time they're getting there. So, yeah, people get there early. So I don't know that there's a ton of time to enjoy Phoenix, but I try when I can.
That's good.
Here and there. I get out enough. Yeah.
Well, we're going to have Sam, as I said, until Tony gets done with the game. The Padres are playing the Angels right now, so we'll talk to him about that when he joins the show. But at some point during the show, you are going to have a chance to win a 4-pack of tickets to a Padres spring training game at Peoria Sports Complex. And you're also qualified for the grand prize, 4 tickets to the Padres Guardians game at Petco Park on April 2nd. Get your spring training tickets now at PeoriaBaseball.com. Coming up on the show today, we have at 2:40, we're going to check in on the health of Magoon Gwath of the San Diego State Aztecs, and Mark Ziegler is going to join us to talk about that. I will spoil it a little bit. News is very good for Magoon Gwath, much better than we all thought yesterday with the torn ACL. We are also, if I could say that clearly, going to be talking to Apple TV match analyst Marcelo Balboa after SDFC's win over the weekend. Sam, did you watch it, or how much were you involved in this?
I didn't watch the first half, but I did watch the entire second half and saw them score the 2 goals. What time is that interview?
3:40. 3:40.
Okay. I may still be on with you by 3:40.
Yeah, yeah.
It was awesome. I got to say, it was a lot of fun to watch. I knew a little about SDFC coming in. I knew that the Galaxy were the champions. I knew that it was a very lopsided line. I knew that they were not supposed to win that game, being an expansion team and against that quality of team in the LA Galaxy. And both goals were awesome. Obviously, a big mistake on the first one. Look, I'm not a total soccer novice. I've called a lot of college soccer in my day.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, back in the day, I've done a lot of soccer. Not that I'm a football guru, if you will. I'm not. But it was fun. Really cool for San Diego to have that moment. I'm sure the match on Saturday it's Saturday, right?
Yeah, I'm going with Adam, so
it should be a
good old time.
I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm sure Snapdragon Stadium will be rocking. I'm sure it would have been anyway, but I'll tell you what, you know, look, when I was, put it this way, I'll give you a little comparison, right? I and this is not apples to apples, but there are parallels. I was with the Amarillo Sod Poodles in 2019, brand new team in Amarillo, Texas. Okay, I was the first broadcaster there. I showed up. The stadium is still getting built. It's still under construction. Brand new stadium, downtown Amarillo. First time they had affiliated baseball in 40 years. And at the time, to tie back to San Diego, they were a Padres affiliate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people were super excited about it. Obviously, there was a ton of marketing, a ton of outreach in the community, a ton of work that went into building goodwill in the community and getting the name out there. Now, you know, look, Amarillo's not quite as big as San Diego, right? So in Amarillo, it was the thing. Okay, so it's not a direct comparison.
That's still great.
I will say this. When that team started playing, and the players got there, and the team was good. They actually won the championship in 2019. Taylor Trammell, Grand Slam.
You've called it. Yes.
Tulsa, mm-hmm. Oklahoma. Yes, big moment in Padre minor league history, I would say, and certainly in Sod Poodle history. But once the team got going, once the team started playing and people had relationships to the players and the team and the brand and the ballpark and the experience, it really took off in a way that was really special. So, you know, that's what it kind of felt like to me on Sunday. You know, look, you know, obviously a lot of work's been done, I'm sure, on the part of SDFC to get this thing rolling, get it off the ground. And I know it's a lot of work, but I'll tell you what, nothing will get fans more excited or get the word out about your team more than what they did on Sunday. You know, I mean, that was a great advertisement, you know,
for
the sport, for sure. And they played hard and it was exciting and pretty cool moment. Credit to that team. They did something pretty cool, and to see those fans up there cheering and going wild.
There were
wild,
a lot was, of SDFC. Yeah, I don't know what to call them yet. FC, do I call them SDFC? Do I call them the football club? I have no idea what to call them, so I'm just going to call them the FC.
San Diego FC or SDFC.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine. You know what? During the broadcast, they were just in San Diego.
Okay.
So you could probably do that. I think SDFC is pretty good, but it was, no, credit to them. It was a really cool thing to watch. And,
San Diego does one thing right.
It was exciting.
And that is show up for their teams and create a good environment. So I'm looking forward to seeing this on Saturday. I've been, I guess, a little hesitant to like make a decision on whether or not this is going to be successful, but I don't think I really need to do that right now. So,
no.
But so far, this was best case scenario for this team winning against the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. No, it was cool. It was really, really cool. And, you know, if SDFC needs any inspiration as to what, you know, a winning ball club can do and how passionate, you know, San Diego fans are, they can, you know, look to downtown to Petco Park, obviously, and what happens there with what the Padres have done the last, you know, now a few years, half decade or so with the way fans have showed up there. So really cool.
It was
very, very cool. And, you know, good for that team, man. That was awesome.
So, yeah, we'll be talking to Marcelo Balboa at 3:40.
What was the name of the guy that scored the two goals?
Anders Dreyer. Or, yeah, Dreyer. Anders Dreyer. Yeah, he scored both of them. That was a trivia question yesterday, and Chris didn't remember. So,
and then Chucky almost had a rocket from, you know, way out. So
I'm looking
cool
forward
too.
To seeing what Marcelo says about this.
Yeah, and there was a part of that match where it really looked like SDFC was gonna break. They were bending real hard, and I was like, uh-oh.
Here it comes.
This is going to fall apart here. But you know what? They held strong. They were a bend but not break kind of defense, and then they scored that second goal to put it away. So,
well, good for them. Cool. We'll talk about them a little bit later. We're going to head to break, but on the other side, I have seen some of this pitch or ABS system around baseball today create some pretty hilarious results. Max Scherzer thought he had a strike. He was nowhere near the strike zone after challenging.
Seen this. I gotta look this
it
up.
Was at least an inch and a half below the zone. And I just saw one in the game that they're playing on MLB Network where it was called a ball, but the actual strike it turned out to be a strike. There was like barely any piece of the ball touching the strike zone. So there's still some things I think we need to work on. But you tweeted something the other day about the ABS system, and we will talk about that when we get back. We'll also talk about Padres in spring training. It's Sammy and Scraby until Tony gets here on 97.3.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
The fan. Back here on Gwynn and Chris, 97.3, the fan, Sammy Levitt in Peoria, Arizona, rocking out to the great rejoin beds that we have here on the show. They're very generic. I always get, Sam, people ask me, hey, what was that bed that you guys just played? And I'm like, generic rock bed number 4? I don't know. But we're the only show that uses these generic beds. I know that you use, like, good stuff, midday, morning.
So why don't you do something a little bit more creative?
Because I don't want to. I don't want to. I'm not a good music person. I'm not. I would end up playing stuff that no one liked.
Well, I'll tell you one reason why I wouldn't do it. Because I feel like Mr. Ello, in particular, would have all kinds of thoughts and complaints about the intro music that you're using.
Okay, did you know? Well, you didn't know, Sam. But he had a song that he used in his opening segment, like his opener, for his entire career. And so when I took the job with Chris, he told me, you got to use this song in the open. And so I used it for like a good 4 years.
What song is it?
It's called like Eric Johnson. I think it's Cliffs of Dover. And it is something that he loves. And I didn't do this because it was bad. I did this because it stopped working in my opens, but I phased it out slowly. And then like a year and a half later, Chris goes, wait, where did my Cliffs of Dover go? Like, Chris, you
Cliffs
know what?
Cliffs of Dover? I will have to listen to this. I'm not sure what
never
song
heard
that is.
If I'd
recognize it.
It's not like...
pull it up. Let's hear it.
All right, I'm going to pull because Oh, gosh.
Cliffs of Dover.
By Eric Johnson. Chris was very, very, very serious about this song.
Chris strikes me as, like, maybe a guy who, like, has a rotation of 10 songs he really likes, and he just listens to them in that rotation.
It's after this. It's this. Hold on. This.
Oh, I know this. I was here when you were still using this.
That's what he wanted. So I'm sorry, Chris, but I had
wait,
to save that.
Maybe I wasn't. I'm not sure that I was. I think there was another show. I think when I was in Corpus Christi, Texas,
there
was
Chris's
a
music?
Show that used that.
Oh, Chris.
I'm pretty sure. I'm almost positive.
Wow.
So maybe that actually might be where I know it from. I'm not sure.
I mean, what are the odds that two shows in this country are using Cliffs of Dover in their intros?
But here's the other thing. It never was only Chris's show.
No,
it was always Quinn and Chris.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I remember the first day we ever met.
Time to adjust.
Yeah, I mean, the first day we ever met, Sam, I went to the... You hang out in that like little conference room down the hall a little bit. He was sitting in there. I walked in. I said, hey, my name's Matt Scraby. He said, hello, I'm Chris Sello. And I said, here, I've done a rundown for today. And trying to be a good producer, and he looks at it and he goes, I don't need your rundown. And then he slides it away. And I was like, okay.
Wait.
Here we go.
Wait. That was the first day.
Yeah, he swears it didn't go down like this, but I'm 100% positive that it did go down like this.
You slid a rundown to him doing your job that you had just been hired to do, and
like,
he said,
like,
I don't need
your rundown. Like, been working on it since like 5 a.m. trying to like prove
my
worth.
That's unbelievable.
Little did Chris know, over the years, he uses the rundown more and more and more. So he told me on the first day he don't need no rundown, and that wasn't true, okay? It was just a very Chrisello moment for me to meet him. I also met him, now that we're telling Chrisello stories, I also met him when I was an intern at a different radio company, and he was doing the morning sports show there, and I was an intern for another morning show, and I walked into the cafeteria, and what they told me was, introduce yourself to everyone in the building. It doesn't matter who it is. So I see Chris in there. I go, hello, I'm an intern, Matt Scraby. And Chris is getting water, and he turns around, he goes, ugh. And he just walks out of the room. And looking back on it, that is so Chrisello to do. But it's very hard. It's very difficult for Chris or for you to read Chris. What's going on the TV, Sam? You're looking at the TV.
Well, I'm keeping an eye on this thrilling Cactus League game between the Angels and the Padres. Angels are leading 2-0 at the end of 8 innings.
Okay.
So Padres in danger of, I think this would be 3 losses in a row in the Cactus League.
Yeah, that's not good.
Sound the alarm bells.
I was ready for a Cactus League championship. I was ready for all of that stuff.
Unbelievable.
Manny Machado looks great. Let's get into the Padres, Sam. I mean, I think a lot of people are feeling a lot better about this roster over the last few weeks. And today, the Padres brought in someone new, Wes Benjamin, a lefty. Mm-hmm. And you tweeted about him. He was a KBO guy?
KBO guy for the last 3 seasons. Pretty good numbers there. Not quite Kyle Hart numbers, who won the KBO version of the Cy Young last year, but was a member of the Texas Rangers organization before that. Did have a handful of major league games in 2020 and 2021, and it now is back with the Padres on a minor league deal. So we'll see what Wes Benjamin is. I think it's a depth move. It adds another starting pitcher to the mix. I'm not quite sure how much Wes Benjamin will be considered for that fifth and final starting spot. It seems like a pretty crowded competition already. But as we know, over the course of a season, you need depth. And you never know when you're going to have to dip into AAA or below and go get somebody that's capable of starting. He's interesting. He's made certainly some adjustments to his pitch mix, to what he does on the mound in the KBO. Has obviously had some success there with it. Was really looking for a starting role. I think there were opportunities for him to maybe be a left-handed reliever with some other teams, but he said he wasn't really ready to turn the page on being a starting pitcher. So this gives him the opportunity to be a starter. I don't know that that's going to be on the major league roster to begin the year, but it always helps to have starting depth. And at the very least, I think that's what Wes Benjamin will bring the Padres. And we'll see. Look, he hasn't pitched against against major league hitters in quite some time. Did throw a bullpen today. Looked good to me. As most guys do in a bullpen. So we'll see. We'll see how he does as the spring rolls along, but adds a little bit of depth from the left side at minimum from Wes Benjamin.
That is a strong name, too. Wes Benjamin.
It's hard to say. Wes Benjamin.
You're going to have to call it. That is a little bit difficult, but it's a good name. It's a good, strong name. Left field battle is pretty awesome right now, I got to say. Through four or five games in the spring, you got Gavin Sheets, you got Jason Hayward, who we know is going to make the team, Connor Joe, we know. But Tirso Ornelas hitting home runs yesterday, Eggy Rosario going opposite field. I saw your video that you put on 97.3 The Fan SD, and he was saying that he worked against right-handed pitchers in the offseason. I think Eggy is going to make this team. He just seems like he's trending in that direction, and he seems like he's building more confidence as he goes, too.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, Matt. Look, I don't think here on February 25th there's any guarantee of anything, obviously. But with that said, I think Eggy has had an exceptional start to his spring in a couple of ways. Number one, he's hitting, which he's always done in his minor league career, and even at the major league level, he's done nicely against lefties. The question with Eggy, if he's going to get more regular playing time, is can he even out those splits a little bit and have success against right-handed pitching? And I'll tell you what, he's got three hits against righties, including what was a really impressive home run yesterday, 107 miles per hour off the bat to right center, line drive home run. He played left field yesterday, which if he can do that, I think really will improve his chances of making this team. He had three pretty routine chances on fly balls out there and caught all of them. I don't think looked uncomfortable out there. He did say after the game that it feels a little weird out there still, but sounds like he's very open to playing out there and doing whatever the Padres ask him to do. So it's been a really good start to spring for Eggy for all those reasons. And you mentioned the work he did in the offseason. He played in the Dominican Winter League in the offseason. And if you look at the numbers, did really well. And I think certainly has worked on hitting right-handed pitching. And I think the Padres are really happy with what he's done so far. Mike Schilts certainly seemed like that after the game yesterday. So I'm with you. We'll see. We got a long way to go. We've still got a month left in spring training. But right now, I would agree that Eggy Rosario is making a very strong case to make this team and could be a real asset for this team.
Chris was actually doing a little investigative work yesterday, and he saw that Eggy Rosario was the leadoff hitter yesterday, and he wondered if there was anything behind that or if it was just Mike Schilt threw him at the leadoff spot and just said, go for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into lineups.
That's what I told Chris
during spring training.
That's what I told Chris.
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into lineups during spring training, especially this early, because a lot of the time you want your big players to get at bats and then get out of there. So you might group them up top a little bit differently than you normally would, because you want the guys to get out of the game and maybe not have to wait around another inning to get their second at bat.
Good point.
And you know, while everybody else heads out. So I wouldn't read too much into it. I really wouldn't. I think that was kind of just the way it shook out. But hey, never say never. But Eggy's had a great start to spring. He really has. So credit to him.
All right. The Padres, I don't know why it's still saying it's 0-0 in the bottom of the seventh for me, because we know
that's
not true.
Angels.
2-0
yeah,
Angels. 2-0 Angels in the eighth, I believe. Anyway.
Oh, I see that, too. I see.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah,
it went back.
That's weird. There's some, well, I saw the Angels score at least one run.
No, me too.
On the stream, so. You're right. On even on my advanced system here, it says nothing.
I never got to talk to you about the ABS system, so we will talk about that on the other side right before
we're
joined
by
Mark Ziegler. So we'll get you the score. We'll send a carrier pigeon to Peoria to see what is happening at Peoria Stadium.
Doesn't matter.
And we'll talk.
Spring training. Who cares?
We'll talk to
Mark
Ziegler.
Love spring training. I just don't care about the score of the Cactus League game.
I know. It's okay. It's so funny how you baseball people take these spring training games. Back shortly with Sammy and Scraby, Mark Ziegler in an automatic balls and strikes conversation on 97.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Three the Fan. Back here in the Odyssey Palace, 97.3 The Fan. Matt Scraby, Sammy Levitt in Peoria, Arizona. We're about to talk to Mark Ziegler to talk about Magoon Gwoth and the Aztecs. Again, I'm spoiling it for you. Magoon Gwoth's prognosis is better than we all thought at first. So we'll talk to him about that. We'll get into the ABS here in 1 second. But Sam, did you see what happened when Roki Sasaki faced major league hitters for the first time?
I saw two home runs he gave up. Yeah.
Yeah, he gave up to the first batter that he faced in major league in his major league career.
He gave up another too. From what I saw, Kyle Teal was one of them, and then I don't know who the other guy was.
I don't know who the other guy was, but he was playing against White Sox prospects, and this White Sox, the number two White Sox prospect, took him deep in his first at bat. Jack Harris tweeted that Roki pitched three innings in his simulated game, gave up a long home run to his first hitter, retired the next six in a row. I'll skip over that part quickly. Included one swinging strikeout, then finished walk, double, walk. He threw 38 total pitches.
All right. I understand if you want to revel in Roki's first outing on the backfield. I would say, and Adam says it in the YouTube chat, it is spring training, so I would encourage everybody to don't say anything you're going to regret come the season, you know, depending on what Roki does.
I can't be happy?
You can. You know, you can, but just remember, it doesn't count.
I know,
so
I'm not.
When it counts, he gives up two home runs in the first game that counts, I think he can.
It wasn't actually even in a spring training game either. It was in a simulated backfield game.
But it will give some ammo for people on social media, which I understand. And Padres fans, you're well within your right. You're well within your right. He turned his back on the Padres after
he spurned us.
Use whatever word you want to use. They did everything in their power to get him here and wanted him here, and he decided he didn't. He didn't want to be here and wanted to be in LA. So Padres fans, you have the right to be mad, and if you want to take some joy in Roki giving up home runs in the backfields, be my guest. But remember, it is backfield work during spring training.
I understand. Save it. I understand it. I'm going to celebrate.
That was really not why I was smiling so wide.
Why?
While you were talking about that, I read a YouTube comment that really made me laugh.
Oh gosh.
I was on my phone, I guess, as we came back on YouTube, and Nate commented, "Sammy swiping right?"
Is that what was happening over there? No, he's drinking his Diet Coke. Everybody thought it was a Coors Light earlier. And then Dominic said that they thought you were a Michelob Ultra guy. But for Dominic, Sam, you said you'd never even had a Michelob Ultra in your life.
I don't know. Maybe. I can't. I feel like I've rarely ever. I don't know that I have.
Okay. Well,
not a Mick Ultra.
Michelob Ultra guy.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I have, honestly.
All right, I've been teasing this whole ABS thing for like 25 minutes.
Well, we can talk about it at the top of the hour, right?
I want to quickly get this part in. You tweeted that you want this in baseball this year.
Yeah. Yeah, and we can talk more about it because I know we got to get to Mark. But, I really like it. I mean, it's working great already at spring training. In Peoria, it's worked really well. At Camelback Ranch the other day, I know it was a Dodger game, a Dodger home game, but I will say it worked exceptionally well as far as how quick they were getting it done. I mean, from the moment the catcher or hitter tapped their helmet, I mean, we were done with the review in 10 seconds. So it's really something. I mean, I'm a very, very big fan of it. It already works really well. And my point was, even if there are players who love it, if there are players that don't love it, and I think there are going to be players that fall on both sides of the fence on that, and managers and coaches that fall on both sides of that argument. With that said, I would certainly say that, you know, it looks ready to be implemented now. So I guess what I was trying to say on the tweet was that if you can implement it now, why wait a season? I mean, if everybody's a fan and it's working well, and to be honest, Major League Baseball typically telegraphs these moves with how they do this. If they're doing it during spring training, it typically means they are really considering it for the future and for next year. Everybody likes it during spring training. You know, heck, if you, even if you can't implement it by opening day, I mean, if it's working and everybody's a fan and you've approved it, can you get it in by some point in 2025? I don't really see why not if you already have it at Spring Training Stadium. So, I'm a fan. I think it works well, and we can get more into it.
Yeah. But that's great. I don't think
that'll happen. I guess it'll be 2026. If it does get introduced, in 26, we'll see. But, no, we'll talk more about it. But
yeah,
it's great.
What you're saying, I co-sign as well, because it looks like it's working well. And yeah. Like I said, Max Scherzer already challenged a pitch that wasn't even close, which I thought was hilarious because he was so sure that it was a strike, but it wasn't. All right. So, we are we're going to talk to right now, Mark Ziegler of the San Diego Union-Tribune. And Mark is the Aztecs beat writer, as we all know. The Aztecs are playing New Mexico tonight, but they're going to be without Magoon Gwath. So, Mark, I wanted to start with this. What is the outlook on Magoon Gwath, and are we going to see him again this season?
I think there's a good chance we'll see him this season. Just the question is how soon. He's listed week to week. He's hyperextended knee, no ligament damage, no surgery. And it's just a question of when, Coach Dutcher feels like he's ready to come back in and play. He's got his long-term, future in mind. And, he was very adamant with me yesterday. He said, look, I know we need him. I know we're trying to make the NCAA tournament. But, look, this kid has a chance to play in the NBA. I'm not going to screw that up. So I suspect he certainly won't play tonight. I suspect he won't play Saturday at Wyoming. Outside chance of playing against UNLV next Tuesday if the rehab goes well. And then I would say either the regular season finale against New Mexico at home or the Mountain West Conference tournament would probably be the best targets, assuming there's no setbacks in the rehab.
Well, that's best case scenario because we all thought Magoon Gwath possibly had some ligament damage. So that's good for him and good for everyone with the Aztecs involved. The whole thing surrounding it is still kind of crazy where he goes down and Chris's tweet about how the refs did it wrong. You mentioned Chris's tweet in your article. Do you have any information on whether or not the Aztecs put in a complaint or talked to the Mountain West about what the referees were doing there that night?
I don't know if they issued a formal complaint. I mean, it's sort of over and done. The official told people along the baseline there was photographers sitting there, there's cheerleaders, the trainer runs out. It's a pretty cramped arena, it's pretty tight down there. And so a couple of people said, what the heck? Because, photographers almost got run over, too.
Yeah.
On the subsequent play, they did blow it dead, and you had Ian Martinez dunking over DJ Davis, and the danger there wasn't so much, okay, Gwath is hurt, he's on the ground. If one of those guys landed on Gwath and rolled an ankle or broke a leg, I mean, can you imagine two guys getting hurt? So they asked the official, what the heck? And the guy said, well, he wasn't on the court, so I couldn't stop the play. And that's something like in soccer. If a guy's not technically on the field, if he gets injured going off the field, they don't stop the game because he's not on the field. And there's been instances where a guy will be right on the edge of the sideline just over it, and a teammate will drag him on the field so the game stops because they're only going to be playing with 10 guys if they don't. So I don't know if that rule really exists. I know that the officials have huge discretion in stopping the game. Like with head injuries, they're supposed to stop it immediately. And usually they stop it if the ball is going in one direction, they'll let that sequence play out and they'll immediately blow it dead. And they probably should have. And I think my understanding is that official knew that he screwed that up. And I think in a candid moment would admit it, because I just don't see any other way you could justify, even, he's saying he wasn't on the court. I mean, I just don't think you can justify that.
Mark Ziegler, San Diego Union Tribune, joining us right now here on 97.3 The Fan. Mark, obviously big game tonight for the Aztecs against New Mexico. A tough opponent, but obviously a great opportunity for the Aztecs at home. New Mexico leading the Mountain West at 14-2. You look at a lot of the bracketology right now. Seems like San Diego State, to a lot of people, is sort of teetering on that bubble as far as an at-large bid. Mark, to you, is this a must-win type of game tonight for San Diego State against New Mexico?
I don't think it's must win, just because if you lose, it doesn't really hurt you. You've already lost to them once, and just sort of like, well, we lost to the two teams above us in the standings, New Mexico and Utah State. So, but we're the third best team, given our resume and all that in the conference. it's not the end of the world. I think the next few games are actually more important because they do more damage to your resume. But I would put it this way. It's a huge opportunity. If you can get another quad one win, you can beat New Mexico and just show, look, it's really hard for us to play at altitude. You can justify, the Utah State loss at home was kind of a fluke. We were up 18. They hit a last second shot. There was a questionable call. And then if we beat New Mexico at home, it's the altitude. And I think that would give them a much stronger argument. I wouldn't say they're 100% in if they win this game tonight, but it would give them a little bit of wiggle room. They could lose certainly one of the last three. If they lose tonight, they might have to sweep the last three just to really feel comfortable in Selection Sunday if they don't win the conference tournament.
Talking to Mark Ziegler about the Aztecs on 97.3 The Fan, and you were just telling us that Magoon Kwoth may be back some point this season, but as a freshman, we didn't really know what to expect from him. We expected ups and downs. He's been better than I think everybody expected him to be consistently. How big of a loss is it for them? How much of a part of what they do is through Magoon Kwoth?
You know, that's a great question, because if you think about it, when they played the first game against New Mexico, he really wasn't much of a factor for their team. He was a starter, and, there was frustrations there that he was playing a lot of minutes. He wasn't really being productive. But, Brian Dutcher had a plan. I mean, he's like, look, this guy's not going to get better. He hasn't played very much basketball. He's not going to get better unless we just go through these growing pains with him and give him the minutes and keep him in the rotation and just sort of learn to live with the turnovers and missed shots and, the bad decisions, and it'll come around, and he certainly has. And so losing Magoon Kwoth in early January versus losing him now are just, they're two totally different players. And losing him now, you're losing your best player. I mean, over the last month, I don't think anybody would argue he's been their best player and their most consistent player, which is like, you just use that word consistent. I mean, I don't think people thought he could consistently be this good, but with bigs, typically a light bulb goes off sometime during their career and they just become a different guy out there. And he has. And now you're losing a double-double guy. You're losing a rim protector that teams are just afraid of, and they don't even go into the paint. On the occasion that they do, this is what Boise State tried. You see 10 blocks from the Aztecs, and so six from him. And so, not having that really hurts their defense, and then it just takes in a way another offensive weapon. And in the last few weeks, they started playing through him more in the low post, getting them the ball and getting the defense to shrink. And it was giving the shooter just that little split second more. And you could see that the 3-point shooting percentage coming up. So you're losing all of that, and it's a big ask to overcome.
Mark, without Magoon tonight against New Mexico and possibly for longer after that, obviously it means some other guys are going to have to pick up some of the workload here. How would you sum up Nick Boyd's season? Obviously, leading scorer their last game. Obviously, has had a nice offensive year. How would you sum up the season for Nick Boyd and what he's been for this team?
Well, it's been interesting because remember, and I think a lot of people forget, he practiced like three times or twice and broke a bone in his foot and was gone for 3 months. It was in a boot for 3 months and came back right before the season and really played well early. And I think, kind of outkicked his coverage a little bit in the sense that, his body wasn't really ready for that much basketball that quickly. And then hit a sort of a dead leg period, like pitchers have dead arms, and then hit a slump when the conference season started. And he just has emerged from that in the last four or five games. And in different pieces, his shooting is still not 100% there, but his offensive aggression is really there, and his confidence is there. And he's, in the last, I think, three or four games, he's averaging 19 points a game. So that's a guy that, has really, really stepped in the void. The guy they really need is Miles Bird, and he'd be the first to admit it. He has not played well. Last nine games, he's averaging under 10 points. He's shooting like 18% from three. He has not played well. He's a little banged up. He's got a hip problem. He's got a right thumb sprain that just won't go away. And it's really bugging him when he shoots. But they need a big game from him. They need something from him. They need, 15 points and, on 4 of 8 shooting type thing. And if they don't get that from him and just having to rely on Nick Boyd and maybe BJ Davis, it just gets really hard for them.
Talking to Mark Ziegler about the Aztecs here on 97.3 The Fan, San Diego Union Tribune. And I wanted to ask you about question. Separate questions. But first, Nick Boyd. We had him on the show last week. Chris brought up a Lamont Butler shot to him. How much do you think that he gets asked about the Lamont Butler shot? Because he was the guy on Florida Atlantic guarding Lamont Butler in the Final Four. Does that come up often?
You know, it did a lot when he first got here, not so much anymore. And he just kind of rolls with it. I mean, I think, you know, if you really watch that. Yeah, and if you watch the play, he plays great defense on him because, okay, Lamont's coming down the floor. He doesn't let him pull up for a three. Lamont wants to drive baseline. He doesn't let him go baseline, which would have caused their defense a lot of problems and maybe dish to somebody for an easy dunk or, you know, or get fouled. He makes him cut back onto his left hand and shoot a contested mid-range jumper, which is the hardest shot in basketball. I think if you would ask them before the play, is this is what the result's going to be, you take that. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, he has to live with the fact that you play great defense, and sometimes, you know, the opponent, you know, once the shot goes up, your job's done, and it either goes in or it doesn't. But I'm not sure what else he could have done.
Yeah, I'm looking at the picture right now. He's in good defensive place. We have it hanging up, the San Diego Union Tribune, in the studio with that picture of the buzzer beater. My second question was, we had Eric Olin, the UCSD head coach, on the show last week, and we asked him, if your team was to play the Aztecs right now, who would win? And, of course, he gave the great coach speak answer of, you know, I would love to my team's chances, but they're a good team. Who do you think would win, Mark Ziegler, between UCSD and San Diego State right now?
A week ago, two weeks ago, I would have said UCSD would have rolled them because San Diego State is not playing good basketball. I think San Diego State's playing his best basketball of the season, and obviously they don't have their best player right now. If they had a healthy Magoon Gwaith, I think San Diego State would win again, just because of the defense and just because of how well they're starting to play right now. It would be really close without Magoon. It would be really, really close. And the hard thing to really gauge with UCSD is they're playing in a league that's not very good against teams that are not very good, kind of cash it in. A league like that, it's a one-bid league. You get to this time of the year and, you know, none of the teams are going to get at-large bids. And so they just kind of cash it in and kind of waiting for the conference tournament. And so you see some really lopsided scores. They're blowing teams out, but they're not playing what San Diego State's playing. They're not, you know, grinding it out, going to altitude, playing in a team like New Mexico, you know, 3 days after you played at Utah State. And so they're really apples to oranges, and it makes it really hard. But I think it'll be a pretty close game. You know, remember, they played the first time, they only scored 56 points against the Aztecs defense, and they've been just lighting up teams for 80, 85 a night.
I think they beat Hawaii by 40 over the weekend, or somewhere close to 40.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. All right, Mark, thank you so much for joining us today and catching us up on Magoon Gwaith and all of this good stuff. Appreciate your time.
Thanks,
yeah,
Mark.
My pleasure. Talk to you guys.
Talk to you soon. That was Mark Ziegler from the San Diego Union Tribune on 97.3 The Fan. I'm really happy that Magoon Gwaith is not out for the season or has a torn ACL, because that injury would not have just been this year. It would have been next year as well. Magoon Gwaith is like, he's a freshman. I'm very scared of the transfer portal in Magoon Gwaith's case, but we've talked about it before, Sam. And Brian Dutcher usually has guys that are committed for the long term. Unless, you know, something is offered above what the Aztecs can really offer. Like Lamont Butler, they were able to let him go to Kentucky, get the NIL money that he wanted.
Sure.
But I don't want Magoon Gwaith going anywhere. I want him to stay right here in San Diego. That's the whole thing about the NIL. It's scary. The transfer portal. You could have a star on your team that you never knew you had, and then the next year they're gone.
Yeah, it's changed a lot of college athletics as we knew it. New era for sure, and it's a different ball game now. No more assuming you can develop a guy through 3-4 years. If you develop him too well, might be out the door.
If there's a radio station out there that wants to give me a couple million dollars to leave, I may entertain that offer. So if we had some sort of transfer portal of radio, it would be great. You know, the NIL money's all taken up elsewhere here, Sam. I almost called you Chris for some reason. Anyway, Sammy and Scraby, we'll be back shortly. We're going to do some Daily Gambit. Tony is on his way, so we'll see if he joins us here in the 3 o'clock hour. But more Gwen and Chris, Sammy and Scraby, Tony ahead on 97.3 The Fan.
I'm Dr. Hrini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banner civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.